best thing you had at Thanksgiving dinner was? Being with family. I was looking for a food answer, but I like that. That's a better answer, being with family. What? Cranberry sauce. Who knew? I had no idea that was your favorite thing, and you're my daughter, okay? What else? What else was a favorite thing that you got to eat and enjoy? Deep fried turkey. Brussels sprouts. We had some of those, too. They were excellent. What's that, Mary?
Kale salad.
Kale salad. You're not like me. Okay. Here you go. I have some of these. Okay. I would probably like yours. That is true. Did I already give you some? No? I've been down your aisle. All right. These are for later. It'll become more clear what they're about. Glad you ate a few things that you liked. Hopefully you had a good couple of days here. I always love this holiday because you get that Friday off, or at least hopefully you did. I know a couple of you had to work, but let me run through a couple of announcements here. Have you seen this shiny new bulletin for us? It's very fancy, very fancy. High-end bulletin. I mean, we really upgraded. I'm going to run through the things here actually kind of line by line because they're all important and coming up. But just so you know, on the back and at the bottom is a weekly update of where we are on our offerings, on our weekly giving, and where that stands to our budget. And so you can check that out every week if you're the kind of person who's curious about that. We will have a budget meeting in just a few weeks to approve the 2018 budget. But there you go, a little bit of info there. Let me run down the front. Rice and beans week starts next, well, it starts tomorrow. Not next week, tomorrow. If you've been with us for a few years, you know what this is about. Let me explain it, though, in case maybe you've forgotten. What we challenge you to do for a week is to eat rice and beans at a meal every day. I don't know, 30, 40 cents is maybe what a meal of rice and beans costs per person. And what we invite you to do is take the money that you would have spent on that meal, whether you're eating in-home or out, and to save that money over the course of the week. And then we get together on Sunday, and we take a special offering. We'll do that a week from today. And we give that money to Kenya Matters. There's information on the table out in the cafe on who Kenya Matters is. There's information in your bulletin about them. But that's Rice and Beans Week. Now, some people are like, I hate rice and beans. Please don't make me eat rice and beans. It's a couple of my kids. They don't get off. But if you're an adult, you could choose to do something different, like we're going to eat out of our pantry this week. And so instead of going and buying a week's worth of groceries, we'll give that money, and we'll just find what's in the pantry and make that work. Some people have done that. Lots of options. Be creative. That starts tomorrow. This Thursday, we're decking the halls here in this building. We have the privilege of making this place beautiful for the Christmas season. Mindy and Becky are planning all sorts of things. All you have to do is show up, and they will put you to work. And at least I think they will. That's the plan anyway. So just come, and you'll hang lights, or you'll put up a tree, or you'll, I don't know what they have planned for us, but that's Thursday. If you want to join us for dinner, come at 5:30. Bring rice and beans. That's what we're having. That's right. And then we'll get to work probably around 6 o'clock. If you don't want to do dinner, you can't get here, come at 6 or come at 7. I'm sure we'll be here till at least 8. The deal is just come when you can, stay for as long as you can. Let's see, this Tuesday is Beer and Hymns. There are now two locations, if you didn't know this, where they started at the Last Chance Tavern on Burton. Now the Knickerbocker on the west side, it has Beer and Hymns as well. So that's Tuesday at 6:30. And then coming up in a little bit is the Best Christmas Pageant Ever, and by a little bit I mean just like a week and a half or something, right? Not far. A lot of people in the branch are in this production, but it involves more than just the branch. 6:30, December 9, it's free. It's right over here at Alger Park Christian Reformed Church. If you're an adult and you want to be in the choir, you can see where the rehearsals, they're the 5th and 7th. Come and sing. We'd love to have you participate in it. All right. That was an announcement extravaganza. Now, let's turn our attention here to something I said we were done with. My children saw this slide this morning, and one of them said, I thought we were, like, done with this. You know, I thought we finished this last week. And that was the plan, actually, that we were going to wrap up this series, The Adventure of Coming Home, last Sunday. thought maybe we might do something this week to prepare for Advent, but I want to come back to this story one more time. Because I think that we just touched on something last week that we really didn't get to talk much about, but I think it's a really important part about coming home. And it really draws from this verse. This is verse 31, where the father comes out to the son, the older son. The older son is standing outside of the house. This, by the way, is the story of the prodigal son. The older son is standing on the outside of the house, angry, resentful, refusing to go in. And the father comes out to plead with him to come inside. And then the older son, what does he do? He complains about never, ever getting even a certain animal? Yeah, a goat, you know. He says, you never even have given me a goat. But this good-for-nothing brother has crawled back home. You've given him the fattened calf. Okay, all that happens, and then the father says this, I am always with you, and everything I have is yours. I am always with you. I think there are a couple of ways to hear these words. One is to hear them as a factual statement. That what the father is doing is simply stating what is true. I am always with you. And maybe that's part of what's going on here. But wouldn't that be an odd thing for the father to say to the son in this story? Has this verse ever struck you as kind of strange if you take it as a factual statement? I mean, think about it. The father and the older son have been living under the same roof, working in the same fields every day his whole life. In fact, the older son wears it as his badge of honor that he's never left home and he's done everything the father wants him to do. They've always been together. So if I'm the older son and I'm listening to this and it's just a factual statement, you know what my response would be? It would be, thank you, Captain Obvious. Right? That's what I'd say to the father. Like, of course, you're always with me. Maybe this is more than a factual statement, though. Maybe this is an invitation. One way to hear this is to hear this as the Father or God just saying to us, I'm always with you. That's just the truth. It's the fact. The other way to hear this is as an invitation. I am always with you. I am here now. I am always with you, even in this moment, right now, and I'm inviting you into relationship. Which, I don't know, to you, does that sound simple enough? Hey, God's always with me. Wow, isn't that great? It's wonderful. Yes? Maybe? No? I don't know. Maybe you don't think it's wonderful. I don't know. Maybe you think it's wonderful, and it's a great statement and a great, just nice sentiment. As simple as this is, though, that God is always with us, I think we struggle to believe it. I'm not sure we actually believe that this is true. And let me share a few reasons why that might be the case. Here's the first one. I think there's a part of us that believes that God is out there somewhere. Let me ask you a very simple question. Kids, I know you're like bored out of your minds right now, but hang in there with me. I could use your help because you might be able to enliven us and contribute to the conversation here. Where is God? Heaven? Okay, great. Where is heaven? Everywhere. That's a great answer. Where else? Where do you think? Adults too. Adults. Come on. Where's heaven? Did someone say out? Up? Up? Yep. That's totally what we would think of, I think. Yeah. Anybody ever watch The Simpsons? I know you don't because you're getting my child. But anybody, any adults here ever watch The Simpsons, right? The show's quite a show. Had quite a run. I actually find it funny quite often when I catch an episode here or there. There's this episode in which Homer goes to heaven. And he's interacting with God. Well, guess number one what God looks like. God's a giant, essentially, a man with a beard. You know, a grandpa, a really nice grandpa. And God and Homer are interacting. And the whole interaction is very interesting because God, in this little episode, is very aloof, a very distant physically, like Homer has traveled a long way to get to heaven. It's up there somewhere. And when he actually starts talking to God, God is like, has no clue what's going on in the world, in our lives, just checked out. And I know the Simpsons are the Simpsons, and it's just the Simpsons, and it's a cartoon. But I think the Simpsons also have the pulse on what our culture often thinks. Or they promote ideas that influence our culture. And I know that in my growing up, I often thought of God as out there. I've shared with you the story, right? First, I thought God was in the clouds. That's where heaven was. And then when I realized it was a clear day and there were no clouds, I panicked. Because then where's God, right? Where's heaven if there aren't any clouds? And I thought it was just like above the clouds. Well, then I thought, okay, outer space somewhere. And then I started learning about outer space. And we've been to outer space. And at least in the nearby outer space, God's not there, at least we can tell. And so heaven is, I don't know, there's no pearly gates. And so then I just started thinking, oh, God's in like the edge of the cosmos. That's where God must be, like on the edge, the fringe of the universe. I just kept like bringing God further and further away. Here's my point in all of this. I think we are tempted to believe that God is out there somewhere. So let me remind you of what Jesus says. This is near the end of his life, and this is his promise about where God is. This is from John 14. Jesus is telling them that he's going to leave, but he says, I will ask the Father, and he will give you another advocate to help you and be with you forever, the Spirit of Truth. Just notice a couple things. This advocate, the Spirit of God, is going to help you and be with you forever. And then Jesus goes on and says, the world cannot accept him because it neither sees him nor knows him, but you know him, for he what? What does it say? Lives in you. Lives with you, will be in you. And then Jesus says, I will not leave you as orphans, I will come to you. So somehow Christ is present to us through God's Spirit, which is where? In you, in us. Here are the promises in these few verses. I will come to you. I will be with you forever. I will live with you. I will be in you. Which sounds an awful lot like the Father saying to the older son, I am with you always. Friends, God is not out there somewhere. God is in you. Which means that if God ever feels distant to us, and we've all been in seasons, through seasons, maybe we're in one right now where God feels distant, it's not because God has gone off to a distant country. It's not because God has left. It's because we've gone out for a walk. In fact, I used this quote a few weeks ago from a 14th century German mystic and theologian, Meister Eckhart. He says this, which I just think helps capture it well. God is at home. It is we who have gone out for a walk. God's at home. God is right here with us. It's we who sometimes head out. We go off to a distant country in search of whatever, or we stay really close to home like the older son, but still at arm's length. So one reason why we struggle to believe that God is at home is because we think God's out there. Here's another one. Here's another reason. I think we believe that we have to earn God's presence, or there's no way God would draw close to us. Hang in there with me, because you probably struggle with this. If if you're a human being. Anyone here not a human being? Okay, so most of us are human beings. We struggle with this. We struggle to believe that God is here now in us, because deep down we can't believe that the creator of the cosmos would reside in us. First of all, it just seems crazy. How's that even possible? And if it is possible, the next question we ask is why? Why would God reside in me, given that God knows what a broken, wayward person I am? And so, in our disbelief, we follow the path of the older son, and we try to earn God's presence. We tell ourselves that God will be close to us if we just do the right things. Is this not what the older son is doing? Friends, yes? All right, 6 weeks in this story, have we not seen this most every week? What is the older son doing? He thinks he has to earn connectedness with God. And he does so, he works tirelessly, day and night, day after day. But as the parable makes clear, you can work day and night, and you can even do all of the quote-unquote right things in all of your work, in all of your effort, and that is not what will draw you close to God. If you want to draw close to God, you can't do it by earning it. You have to do it through surrender. That is the only way. You have to be willing to lay down your life, lay down your ego. I am always with you. Notice when the father says this to the older son, there's no qualification, there's no condition. I am always with you. We struggle to believe this, though, because maybe we think God's out there somewhere, or we don't think there's any way that God would ever choose to draw close to us. But here's a third reason. We've talked about those first two in this series on and off. Here's the third, though. We're obsessed with the past and the future. I think if you look at the words, I am always with you, I think maybe when you boil it all down, what God is saying to us, what God is inviting us to, is to be with him in this moment right now. Or to say it simply, God is inviting us to be present to this moment right here, right now. I am always with you. God is saying to us in that, like right now, I'm with you now. And I think part of our challenge is that we're so obsessed with the future and the past that we are not present to the now. And in not being present to the now, we miss God now in this moment. We see this with the sons, don't we? What is the younger son obsessed with? The future. What he can get. If he just gets his inheritance, then he can leave this silly home and go out and carve out his future, the future he wants. He's obsessed with the future, and so guess what he misses? The now. What he has right now, what is available to him right now, because all he can think about is the future. What's the older son doing? What's he obsessed with? The past. What I've done, what I have done, and what you, Dad, have not given to me. All he can do is look backwards and be obsessed with the past. And so he misses everything that's available to him right now. I was trying to recount this week. I don't know, if any of you want to challenge me on this, you can challenge me right now. You know, in this space, you can challenge me correct me over an email this week. I may have gotten this wrong, but I tried to recount how many times did Jesus talk about the future? And I could only come up with like a handful. Like one of them is when he says in Matthew 6, don't worry about tomorrow. That's one time he talks about the future. There's another time at the end of his life where he says, I'm going to prepare a place for you. What else? There's a couple parables about some bridesmaids and this future thing that might be coming, how they're supposed to stay awake. It's not much. And whenever Jesus talks about the future, what he always says in those interactions is, don't worry. Because our human tendency when we're obsessed about the future is to do exactly that. We worry. We carry anxiety. And it keeps us from the present moment. I also tried to think about how many times does he talk about the past? I couldn't come up with many. And whenever he does, included in the conversation is forgiveness. Jesus talks about forgiveness whenever the past is brought up. Why? I think it's because Jesus knows that when we obsess about the past, regret and shame are often the things that we carry when we obsess about the past. Jesus seems awfully in the moment when you look at his life. Present to the now, to the person in front of him, not consumed with the future or the past. I think this parable invites us to do the same because it's our worry and regret that often keep us from experiencing this. So there's a few reasons why maybe we struggle to believe that this is true. Why we really find it difficult to experience God like now. Why God often feels distant to us. There's a few reasons. And so what do we do? Like what's the response to that reality? Well, here's what you can't do. You can't just kind of think your way to a new way of experience. Does that make sense? In other words, this is not something that you just have to get intellectually. What I'm not saying to you today is, hey, you should really think about this a lot and just think about it, and then like think about it some more, and then things will change for you if you just think about it, if you just get this into your mind. That's a helpful thing to think about it. But at some point, we have to experience God. We have to experience God's presence now in this moment here today and the next moment and tomorrow's moments. So what we're going to do today to end are a couple of things. And kids, especially kids that are old enough to engage in a conversation with a parent, which is probably most of them in this room, could certainly participate in either of these, but especially the second one I'll talk about. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to share two ideas for how you could, in the next 5 minutes or so, respond to this invitation. The first is something we've done around here, although not for a little while. Kids, you could try this. Adults, you can try this too. Both of you, adults and kids, will probably find it challenging. But in the next few minutes, right where you are, to practice this ancient form of prayer called breathing prayer. And right where you are, to let your breath kind of be a guide for prayer. And as you breathe in, to say the words to yourself, I am, and then as you breathe out, always with you. I am always with you. Or I don't know, maybe those words don't quite resonate with you. You could pick any words. You could change that a little. You could change it completely. But to quiet yourself to this moment and to find God in the simple exercise of prayer. That'd be one option. Here's another, and this is where the sheets of paper come in that I passed out to you. If that's really hard for you, doing it in this space, or it just might be a struggle and you don't want to do that breathing prayer thing, you could do this, which is more tactile, kind of more concrete. But on the front, you would have an opportunity to write down things from your past and future that are kind of taking up bandwidth. Think of yourself as a cable that has a certain bandwidth to it. When you and I are obsessed with the past and the future, there's no bandwidth left to be present to God in this moment now. So a simple step would be to write, actually get a pen, that we have some in the back, and write down whatever from the past or the future is taking up bandwidth. And spend a couple minutes doing that. And then the flip side provides some ideas of how then to surrender those things and to invite God into this moment with you. This thing could take the whole time. You could easily burn through the 4 or 5 minutes that we're going to take just doing this. You could use all 4 or 5 minutes doing the breathing prayer. You could do both. Or as we like to say around here, you could just do none of it. You know, it's your call. There's no pressure. You should do whatever in this moment helps you reflect more on and perhaps begin to experience the presence of God in this moment. One final word. What we are going to do here today in 5 minutes is not likely to be earth-shattering for you. If you're hoping that in the next 5 minutes, the heavens open and God speaks to you in an audible voice and the direction of your life has changed forever, probably not going to happen. I hope it does. But what's more likely is that you'll have a little bit of a hard time in the next 5 minutes and that you'll be distracted and your mind will wander, and that's okay. To give yourself grace in these next few minutes, and then to do this tomorrow, or something like it, and the next day, to take 5 minutes in the morning, or to take a walk on your lunch hour. Experiencing God in the present requires practice. So, I am always with you. That's Jesus' promise to us today. You've got a couple of options on how to maybe engage this. Let me just say a brief word of prayer, and then we'll have a few minutes to engage, and then I'll close us, and we'll share communion together. So let's pray. God, for all of us, wherever we are, whatever we might be feeling, wherever we might think that we are on the journey, whether we feel close to you this morning or distant, would you meet us here and now in these next few moments? And in doing so, God, help us continue the journey toward home. We ask for your help in Jesus' name. Amen.